Hey everyone, this is Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast looking at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. Today's show is a recap of the Cavs' Game 1 loss to the Indiana Pacers, a 98-80 loss, not anything we expected. I talked about the game with Bleacher Report's Greg Schwartz, who you've heard on the show before if you're a longtime listener. If you're new, he's one of my favorite Cavs followers. You can find him on Twitter at CavsGregBR. Talked about the game, Ty Lue, all of the different adjustments that they did and did not make in this game, and really what went wrong and caused the Cavs to lose. With LeBron James losing a playoff opener for the first time and losing a first-run game for the first time since 2012. Tomorrow, on Tuesday, you'll have a full-on recap of the game again with Tony East from Locked On Pacers. We'll dive into what this game meant for both teams. And then all week, you'll have podcasts covering this series, everything going on with the Cavaliers. It's going to be a busy week, an interesting time, as always. And this team just is always full of something. But here's today's show. Not a great performance for the Cavs, but I think it should get better from here. But Wednesday, it's a long time until then, but it's going to be interesting. But here's today's show with Greg Schwartz of Bleacher Report. Please go on iTunes, subscribe to the pod. It is the best way to support this podcast. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And here's today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
Greg, thank you so much for joining me as you make the trek back from Cleveland. But as we're here, the Cavs did lose this game. Not the game I think any of us expected. They didn't lose by giving up a ton of points. Their defense was actually kind of okay. But they only scored 80 points, only scored 15 points in the fourth quarter, only 14 points in the first quarter. Had a good third quarter, giving up just 18 points and scoring 27 points. But overall, just not a good Cavs game. What to you stood out? Like, what was, when you look at this game, you and I were sitting next to each other at the queue in this game, seeing this live, what stood out to you on that initial watching in real time?
Yeah, first of all, you got to give the Indiana Pacers a lot of credit. They obviously had a game plan, how they wanted to attack defensively. They were amazing at contesting shots, putting pressure on guys. Kevin Love, I want to look at a shot chart, but basically all his attempts were mid-range to three-pointers that kept him, from his sweet spots right underneath the basket. And on the other end, they had a lot of good contested shots. And that's something LeBron talked about after the game, too, with Victor Oladipo. You know, he bring the ball up the court, you got a defender right in his face, and he pulled up. It's like he can measure the exact amount of space that he needs to get that shot off, and he was over 50% from beyond the arc too. So hey, right away, you got to give the Pacers a lot of credit. I said that was probably the best defensive performance I've seen anybody put up against Cleveland all year. And, I don't think anybody was surprised if the Cavs would have lost the game in this series. But kind of like you said, like if they were going to lose a game, you're like, oh, well, they're going to lose it, 130 to 125. They're just not going to be able to stop the other team. Defensively, they were fine. Offensively, they were a train wreck, and a lot of that goes to the credit of Indiana's defense.
Yeah, I think they did Victor Oladipo talked about this post-game, that they threw a lot of different looks to LeBron. I think the Pacers, as much as the Cavs were okay to let this happen, I think the Indiana was very happy to let other guys not named LeBron James beat them. They were throwing things to LeBron where they were leaving somebody open. A lot of the time that was Jeff Green. We're going to talk about him and how bad he was in this game, but if you just roll down some of the role players, Kevin Love ended up 3-6 from 3, but was 3-8 overall. George Hill was 3-7. Hood was 4-8. Missed three threes, including two, I think, in the fourth quarter. Clarkson was 0-3. Calderon was 0-3. Korver 0-2 in only 4 minutes. JR was kind of the one role guy, as well as Nantu did a really nice job. I thought, at least moving off ball. This game to me, I think you just look at how the offense flowed. It was just so weird. LeBron was so passive in the get-go. When I think their best moments, as a lot of it has been all season, is when this team is moving, when this team is pushing the ball up the floor, when LeBron is this rolling head of steam. I think their best moments were in these situations where they just pushed and pushed and pushed, and it wasn't relying on them getting in the half court. They really struggled, I thought, in executing and coming up with sets and coming up with situations where things just sort of flowed naturally and were able to execute organically in the half court. That's a problem they're going to have to fix. It's fixable. This team should be a lot better offensively in game two, game three, game four, game five. But I think a problem here really was they just were, they got really, I think, just struggled in the half court to execute because some of their weaknesses, I think, are magnified when they're not putting a team on their heels or LeBron isn't operating out of the post. I think not having George Hill in this game, not having another point guard they're comfortable playing a ton of minutes, I think kind of disrupts the flow of some of what they're doing.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of shot creation on the floor. I mean, obviously you have LeBron, and basically played the whole game. I think, 44 of the 48 minutes, you know, a couple minutes at the end there, the game was over, and they kind of emptied the bench. So really, you know, he played 44 out of the first 46 meaningful minutes. Didn't get a lot of a break there because they didn't have any real guys to kind of break down the defense and create shots. I mean, Kevin Love basically turned into a spot up shooter, which he way too often does. George Hill had that back injury Ty Lue talked about that flared up at halftime, said he was kind of stiff, you know, didn't think he was going to give him a whole lot in the second half. But then it was kind of weird that they didn't play Jose Calderon a lot, especially in the second half. I think he finished with just 9 minutes overall. And that's, you know, Calderon, you don't want to play him 30, 40, you know, whatever big minutes a night, but he's fine when he gives you 20 minutes. You know, if you want to keep him at 20 minutes, I thought he's fine. And he's, you know, he's not a Chris Paul. He's not going to get you 10 assists, but he's somebody who actively looks to get other people shots and is perfectly fine sacrificing his own offense. And we know that he can knock down three pointers when he wants to too. So I thought that was a little curious that they didn't play Calderon a lot, especially in the second half when George Hill was hurt. We've seen that before. He can step in and play for him. And, you know, Lou even said after the game, he's like, you know, we had to play LeBron at point more than I wanted to. And he said, we didn't have any other options. Now, that's kind of a weird statement. Like, you know, here a couple weeks ago, he basically came out and said that Calderon was going to be a part of the playoff rotation. And he liked playing him with Jordan Clarkson. And, you know, the numbers with when Calderon plays, the team is so good. But yet we say all that, and Calderon doesn't play. He played very few, if maybe just a couple minutes next to Clarkson, where Lou said he wanted to use him. I just thought all that was kind of weird, you know, going into it and with everything that was said, and this is supposedly the plan. You had the opportunity to do it, and you didn't. So to me, there was a lot of kind of questionable coaching decisions there as well.
Let's get into the kind of the coaching stuff. I think some of this has to be, you know, I think Hill's injury really impacts the second half. The lineup decisions, I think, as you pointed out, I think George Hill, he took that screen, which was called a foul on Trevor Booker, probably should have just been called a bad teammate award on whatever Cavs
right,
should have called
right.
That screen. That was not really a foul. That was just a really, really good screen on Trevor Booker's part. George Hill kind of unavailable. Kyle Korver, it seems like he was maybe a little overly, in my mind, a little overly cautious with him. I think the three-point shooting he provides could have been really valuable in this team, and if he says he's good to go, and, you know, I didn't talk to Kyle. I don't know if anyone has talked to Kyle post-game. He left pretty, you know, not, I passed him in the hallway, and he was walking out with his family, so I don't, you know, I don't know if anybody talked to him before he left, but I think you could have used him. You know, I think the riding with Jeff Green was a weird decision. I think I understand the idea of Jeff Green. It's something I've talked about on this podcast. You and I have talked about in real life, but there's a limit on what Jeff Green's going to provide you. You know, and I think, you know, going to Nance was a good decision when he did it. I actually like that when it got bad early, he did put in Korver. He did try to make changes right away to kind of deal with some stuff. But I think overall, the flow is just weird. And like, for instance, I have in my, I don't remember exactly when this was or how long it lasted, but it was like in the third quarter on that run, you know, they put in Green for Love, and I'm like, okay, this is just going to kill the spacing, and you know, JR came out at one point, and I was like, could JR probably, I know he's going to get tired, but he probably shouldn't come out at this point because he's just been so good. This wasn't. I think Ty is better than people give him credit for. I think he's a guy who's going to make really good adjustments based on what he saw in this game. I think he deserves that benefit of the doubt. But this was kind of the proof of some of the issues with Ty is I don't think he's a great in-game adjustment coach to the level that some other guys are. He's not a great in-game tinkerer when things go haywire.
Yeah, I think Ty Lue's a lot better, you know, when he has a game, when he has, you know, like we have. We have 2 days off now in between Wednesday. I think this is probably when he's at his best, when he has a couple days in between. He can look at the film and he can make adjustments there. Like you said, he's not a great adjustment maker, and I think we saw that. You know, a couple problems for me. You had Korver coming in the first quarter. Rodney Hood, I think, picked up his second foul, and he kind of went to Korver right then. And it was probably earlier than he would have liked to use Korver because of Hood being in foul trouble.
No, and a much earlier sub than he normally makes, just to throw that out there. He's normally a late first quarter sub guy. This was far earlier than he usually makes any kind of change.
Right. And, you know, it probably wasn't something that he came in and said, like, oh, you know, Korver's going to go in at this time. I think it was clearly because of the foul trouble. So he does that, and Korver, I think, in his 3 or 4 minutes, I think he was a minus 10. Like, but that was not Korver's fault. It was a really bad stretch in the game. And Korver took a couple shots. I think he missed all of them. But, you know, it was good to see him, you know, testing the foot, coming off screens, getting a couple shots up. So, and he only played about 3.5 minutes. And we're thinking, okay, you know, he said before the game he's going to be on a minutes restriction. I didn't know 3 was his minutes restriction. The point that he didn't go back into the game, especially when you're in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and, you know, at some point those leads were getting up to 15, 17, 19 points. 3-point shooting is the fastest way you're going to get back into it. And, you know, no disrespect to Jose Calderon, who's probably statistically the team's best 3-point shooter. Korver is the team's probably most reliable 3-point shooter. And he doesn't need a lot of space. And my God, if you could have had Korver hit a couple 3-pointers in a row, I mean, you were there. The crowd was just waiting to erupt. Like, you know, they were just give us something, because anytime the Cavs went on a run, Indiana answered, and it would kill the momentum. And then, you know, JR would hit a shot, or LeBron would come up with a good play, and, you know, all of a sudden the lead's trimmed back down and the crowds get into it, and then Indiana kills it again. Why not bring Korver back into that game when, you know, you said bringing him back in had nothing to do with his health? I forget his exact reason. I think he said it was he wanted to play Jeff Green instead because of the more athleticism on defense. But would that not have been a good spot for Kyle Korver to come in and try to hit a couple threes and get this team closer? I didn't understand that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The one thing about this game that I think we have to kind of wonder, and I don't think this wouldn't have changed the game or anything like that, and it wouldn't have got them a win if they would have just shot a normal percentage. But I do think there's something to be said that Kevin Love misses these 2 threes early. They only make 2 of their first 12 shots. You know, Korver misses threes. They ran these little actions for him to get him quick threes. One of them, I think, went halfway through the net. Hood, you know, missed those threes. I think if they just make some of these threes early on, the momentum is going to feel better. LeBron talked post-game about how some of these guys were feeling jittery. I think Clarkson, Hood are kind of the prime examples of that. Nance didn't really seem too fazed by everything that kind of went on here, but I think if they would have got rolling early, this could have made a better of a difference. And, you know, I think, you know, yes, Korver had some issues with, he's going to have some issues defensively in any series he plays. And I think at this point in his career, at least athletically with certain guys, but I think if they would have just shot better early, maybe it feeds into it. And look, this team just didn't shoot well. The Cavs are a very good offensive team when everything's clicking. Yes, they're not the most innovative group or anything like that, but this is a team that is better than shooting 38.5% from the field, 23.5% from three. And look, they missed 8 free throws. LeBron was 10 of 14. Love missed his one. Hood missed 2 in a row at a key point in the game. If they just make some of these free throws they missed, those add up. Some of this is going to be a little closer, and maybe that's enough for them to steal this win instead of losing by 18. I don't know, But I wonder if this the early momentum of this game put them in a hole that was just kind of a lot for this team to get out of. And this again, this is not a team that has played together and been through something like this before. LeBron has been down 3-1. Love, these guys have been down 3-1 before. A lot of these guys and have come back. A lot of these guys just have not been through that adversity, and this might have seemed just like a lot for them. I don't know, but that's just a working theory.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is, you know, this was kind of the first game where they had everybody available since they made the trades. You know, somebody's, of course, you know, George Hill's sustained a minor back injury because, you know, why would we go to an entire game and keep everybody healthy? And there's been no consistency with the rotations, and it's not really Lou's fault because they've had guys in and out. I mean, Lou missed 9 games himself. So I think that's going to take some work too. Like, you know, if we knew for sure who the starting five was, and then those guys knew, okay, you know, I have until, you know, 4 minutes left in the first quarter, and then I'm going to be subbed up for this guy. And then, okay, we know for a fact that this is what the second unit is going to look like. If they can at least start to establish that throughout this series, I think that's going to go a long way in the rest of the postseason. Because you look at Indiana, and, you know, for the most part, they've had the same starting five all year. They've had the same rotation all year. They've been fairly healthy overall. And you could just tell how much more connected they were, how much more they trusted each other defensively, how good they rotated, they closed out. You know, the Cavs, they don't have that yet. They don't have that trust in each other. They don't have that, you know, I mean, we're going to see lineups in this series that have never played with each other in the regular season yet because so many guys have been out. And, you know, continuity is important. And especially in the playoffs, you have to have that trust. And I think LeBron right now is trying to figure out who do I have to trust? Because, you know, I thought it was Kevin Love, and Kevin Love can't even get me 10 points. And, you know, it was basically turned into a spot-up shooter that wasn't making shots. You know, I used to trust J.R. Smith, and J.R. has been a lot better lately, and he had a good game today. But, you know, I don't know if I can trust Larry Nance in the playoffs. He had a good game. I don't know if I can trust Jordan Clarkson. I don't know if I can trust George Hill. I don't know if I can trust Rodney Hood. There's just a lot of stuff the Cavs have to figure out. Ideally, you'd like to figure it out in a win. But I don't think anybody should be hitting the panic button on them yet, just yet. I personally predicted they were going to sweep. Obviously, I was wrong. I did not give Indiana enough credit. But, you know, this series now looks like it's more going to be figuring out who the Cavs are. And certainly Indiana is a good opponent. But if the Cavs can figure themselves out and they can be healthy, certainly their talent level is still far and above Indiana, and they should still win this series fairly easily.
What for you is the thing about this game that was most concerning? There's a talking point we need to get to that I'm wondering if this covers it because it's mine, I think. But what was the thing about this game that was just most alarming to you in terms of the Cavs' many issues?
That they missed Kyrie Irving.
Well, I think you and David Zavak and others rightfully say that, and Kevin Love was very accurate in pointing this out, that the Cavs definitely do miss Kyrie Irving. They could have used his offense. They're just not going to have it otherwise. And it, based on how this team plays, based on how good Kyrie is, I think him as a running mate kind of solves some. It would have helped quite a bit in a game like this.
Yeah, I mean, just to have that guy that you know is going to get you 20 points. Like, you know, LeBron might have a 20-point game. LeBron might have a 40-point game. But, you know, LeBron's going to give you consistent scoring, consistent playmaking. Is there any other player on this roster right now that you can look at and you can say, oh, for sure, I'm getting 15 out of this guy. This guy's going to be a big-time offensive contributor. Because there's not. You'd love to say it's going to be Kevin Love, but obviously that's not the case. He was kind of marginalized in this game. You know, you got a guy like Rodney Hood, man, he could score you 25 points a game. He's got the capability of doing that, but you know, we've seen him score 6 points in a game or 4 points in a game and, you know, kind of disappear. George Hill, if he can stay healthy, you know, he can give you 20 points like the one game earlier when he was 10 of 11 shooting in the regular season, or he can disappear, go 2 of 7 from the field and get 4 points. There's just nobody like Kyrie where you can say, oh, he's getting me 20. I can count on him. I can rely on him. Because right now you don't know where all that other offense is going to come from, especially if Love's going to give you a dud game like he did today. And, man, that's tough if you're LeBron, if you don't know where the other offense is going to come from besides yourself right now.
Yeah, Rodney Hood is ever he's done, I think, not very much to prove to drive up his value for the summer. That's a whole other conversation, but I think he's a problem. My biggest concern is I really think Ty Lue might need to go back and reevaluate starting Jeff Green. Indiana had no desire to guard him in the corner. It mucked things up inside for Love, for the cutters, for LeBron. I really wonder if they just have to go back to playing Love at the four, and I know it's not ideal. I know against certain other against the Houston or Golden State, that's not going to be something that's totally going to work perfectly. But I do think that in this series with this team they're facing, and a lot of teams will see in the East, I think it can work. I think in particular with this series, there's a difference in between what Larry Nance and Jeff Green are going to do in the sense that, yes, Larry Nance is not a three-point shooter either. Teams are going to ignore him shooting those 18-footers. He'd take one in this game, but teams ignored that in the regular season. With this, at least it forces Miles Turner to guard him and not guard Jeff Green and just plan himself as an extra guy on the fringes of the paint or in the paint. It doesn't give you a shot that Indiana's just cool with. It gives you someone who's going to move a little bit better, be harder to, I think, defend inside than Green is going to provide a little bit more rebounding and interior defense. I know we don't know how much we can bank on a guy like Larry Nance, but I think he should start. I think this game to me is just this is my ideal starting lineup anyway, but I think Nance should start, and I don't think Jeff Green in the series is just going to help you that much. He probably needs to play. I would like to see them maybe give Jetty a chance and go small and quick if they're going to play a little quicker and smaller. But if they don't want to go bigs all the time, and Tristan's not going to be a factor. But I would start Larry Nance, and I don't think I would think twice about it. I think that to me is the one lineup adjustment I would make that would make a lot of sense.
I agree with you 100%. I was a huge fan of starting Nance over Tristan Thompson, and obviously Nance proved that he deserved the job when they were going small for a while and they had Nance at the five and they had LeBron at the four. I mean, they had some really good games out of Larry Nance. He gave him quite a few double doubles. I remember his debut at starting center against the Pistons. I think he went for like 22 and 15. He played pretty good defense on Andre Drummond, an all-star this season, by far the Pistons' best player. And I thought, in terms of free agency plays outright for him, this could be your starting center for the next, 5 to 7 years at least. It's not like Larry Nance is a typical rim protector. He gets you more steals than a typical center. He's got that spring in his legs where he can challenge shots, and he just kind of keeps elevating to close out on shooters. And I just thought, okay, this is your starting center. And I remember the press conference of the time when Ty Lue came out and said, yeah, we're going to start Jeff Green for the rest of the regular season and in the playoffs. I didn't know what to say. I was at a loss for words. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Jeff Green is not a starter on a playoff team in 2018, or at least he should not be. There's a lot of things he does well, and I get it. He wants to have the defensive versatility where he can defend shooting guards at point guards, and that's great. But then you look at the other side of that, 0 of 7, missed every shot, had 0 points, had 0 assists, contributed 0 offense, and he played, I think it was 26 minutes he ended up with. I mean, for a while, he was the third leading minutes guy behind LeBron and Kevin Love. So not only was he starting, he was playing big minutes. And clearly, Nance outperformed him off the bench. Even in the early going, I think Nance scored 4 of the Cavaliers' first eight points because they couldn't get a bucket. And they put him in, and he actually could score a little bit around the rim despite having a size mismatch with Miles Turner. I didn't understand the move to go with Jeff Green as your starting power forward. Like you said, on defense, the Pacers, they can just leave him wide open on the three-point line, and he's not going to make those shots. and that kind of ruins everything else offensively for them. I said, kind of going at the end of the regular season, that they were going to have to decide between Tristan and Jeff Green in the rotation, because that's just too many bigs in today's NBA that can't shoot. And Larry Nance, he's got a decent mid-range game. He's not a three-point shooter, but you can get away with that spacing because you can use him at the elbows as a facilitator, as a passer, as a guy to run your offense through. I don't know if Lou makes a change because he's seemingly so loyal to Jeff Green from their time in Boston together, but the sooner they bench him and the sooner they start Nance, they are immediately better. And I don't know if he's going to do it. I hope he does, but yeah, you're absolutely right. They need to be starting Larry Nance in this series.
One other thing I think should be on the table is I wonder if they should go back to JR as the two, or at least go to Korver the two. I think JR has just been really good of late. I think he was one of the better guys in this game. I think he's going to play more. It seems like I think he should. I think Hood's just kind of not really reliable at this point. I think JR and Korver are just going to be more reliable. Anything else rotation wise stand out to you? And before we look a little bit ahead to game two, is there anything else that Ty Lue did that happened the defense? Let me hit on this. I think the one thing I did like was that Oladipo did look sort of uncomfortable when they blitzed him. He wasn't making these pinpoint super accurate decisions in those situations. I do think if they go back and watch the film of the third quarter when they were very energetic, were pressing, not a full on pressing, but getting a guy's faces, making the right moves to really get in Indiana's face and trap and to blitz and to make them kind of play chaotically, that led to a lot of success, and I think they need to go back to that for the full game. I think that the intensity in that third quarter on defense was something I think they need to come up. But that was really the only other thing to me that really stood out in this game. Anything else for you?
No, that's a good point. I just think it's funny that, you know, we're talking about going back to J.R. Smith because he's a more reliable option than somebody else at this point. When we're talking about J.R. Smith as being reliable, oh man, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, but that's kind of at the point where we're at with Rodney Hood, just because you don't know what you're going to get out of him. Yeah, last year we saw a lot of that in the postseason. We saw it, you know, with Paul George in the first round and the second round with DeMar DeRozan, and then the third round, those first two games with Isaiah Thomas when he played, it was kind of like, we're going to make you – we're going to put you in uncomfortable positions, like you said, when we're going to blitz you and we're going to make you either give up the ball or you're going to have to take a tough shot. And when we do that, we live with the fact that you might make a pass and somebody else might be open. And we're banking on the fact that everybody else is going to have to beat us and we're going to kind of marginalize what you do. And I think that's a good strategy, especially when you have a team like Indiana. I mean, if Victor Oladipo is a 15-point-per-game scorer, this team probably doesn't make the playoffs. But he's not. He's a 20-plus-point-per-game scorer and an all-star because he's kind of their engine that gets everything else going. And he's very, very good. He's very good shooting the ball. He's good at getting to the basket. So I agree with your strategy of, you know, trying to do that, but you have to have the right personnel to do that too. So do you consider kind of going small? If you're dedicated to keeping Love at the five, do you consider going small and putting LeBron at the four, maybe Rodney Hood at the three and JR at the two, and kind of use JR the way you used him in the playoffs last year and say, like, you know, any offense you can give us is great, but, you know, really we kind of need you to guard the opponent's best player and we need you to lock in on him. JR, for all the time that he's been a bad or inconsistent defensive player, we know that in the playoffs he's been pretty good defensively. He can lock in when he's motivated, when he knows that the team's counting on him to do it, when he doesn't have those defensive kind of mental lapses. You know, he could be a very good defensive player, and he kind of proved that last year in the postseason. So, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, do you consider going small just to put another, you know, perimeter athlete out there to guard them, at least for this series? Because like you said, when you blitz Victor Oladipo and you put him in uncomfortable positions and try to make him give up the ball, it's what you did last year in the postseason, and it was very successful. So, yeah, I'm wondering to see if Lou makes an adjustment and tries to do that some more in games two and beyond.
If Green continues to start, I do not think that he should be guarding Thad Young. I think I don't really understand why he wasn't guarding Oladipo. If that's his stated purpose, why was he not guarding Oladipo?
That's a great point.
You know, LeBron can't really roam off Darren Collison the way he can roam off Thad Young, right? That to me just seemed like a weird decision too. So like, maybe it looks better defensively at least if Green isn't guarding Thad Young and LeBron gets to roam and you get to do something with that. But that was weird to me. I just that doesn't make sense to me either. It's just one of these little things that I think added up and kind of doomed the Cavs in this game to some degree.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier. Is, you know, all the things that we expected to see that Lou said, God knows if, you know, maybe it was a smoke screen or something. But, you know, the fact that he was talking about, I like to play Jeff Green because he can defend opposing guards. And then, like you said, he started out the game on Thaddeus Young, a power forward. So you're like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, the fact that he was talking about, he liked playing Jose Calderon and he was going to play him next to Clarkson and he's going to be in the rotation. And then he hardly plays with Clarkson at all and he only gets 9 minutes even when George Hill goes out. You're like, that's kind of weird. That's not what he was talking about at all. And like I said, maybe it was a smoke screen. Maybe that's just him, you know, saying stuff and trying to give misleading information to other teams that might be listening. But yeah, it wasn't what you thought you were going to get. And if you're going to start Jeff Green because he can guard opposing wing players or guards, why didn't you do that? That doesn't make much sense to me. If you're not going to do that and you're just going to play a post player, for God's sakes, put Larry Nance in there. I think Larry Nance can guard Thaddeus Young just as well as Jeff Green can. A lot of questionable coaching decisions tonight. But again, like we talked about, Lou's strength kind of comes between games and not necessarily in games. So hopefully they can make those adjustments for game two.
It's a long time until game two, Wednesday in Cleveland. I will be there. I don't think you'll be there because you won't be able to make their drive in from Toledo, but the Cavs will be back game two, a whole lot going on. We'll hear from them on Monday, and you'll have more podcasts, everyone, this week. But it's going to be interesting. This is not, I think, the game any of us expected. It puts the Cavs on their heels. It puts the Cavs in a position where I think they have to respond and I think show us something on Wednesday. Greg Schwartz is a writer at Bleacher Report. You can find him on Twitter @CavsGregBR. Greg, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.